Hey, what's up, sinners and choosers? Welcome to another episode of Choose Your Own Religion. My name is Joe. As always, I am your trusty guide on this week's episode, and I'm going to get right into it. This week, I have Erica Blumfield on the show, and this week, I'm doing something a little cool, a little different with the intro this week. So you guys know I have these live Choose Your Own Religions, which, if you don't know, is Los Angeles' only storytelling show about religion, as far as I can tell. And I've been starting to record more and more of these just for my own personal use. And Erica was actually on the last one in July. And the thought occurred to me, how cool would it be if I could play her story on the show? And so I asked her, and she said, yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and play her story that she told on the show. We talk about it a little bit later in the episode, but I thought it might be cool to give you guys a little flavor of the kind of stories you can hear if you come out to one of our live shows. So I'm just going to play it. All right. Our next storyteller coming up to the stage is she's a wonderful, bright beacon of light. That's her main credit. Give it up for Erica Blumfield.
Wow, that was the best credit I've ever been given. Thanks, Joe. I'm a teacher, and I really do love teaching, except for when I don't, because seriously, they can be the biggest group of little assholes. But I'm at work, and I'm waiting. I also tutor, so I'm standing waiting for my new tutor student in the door of my classroom, and I see this little girl skipping down the hallway. And that's one of the things I love about teaching, is like seeing a kid skip. They are so carefree. She stops when she gets to me, and a huge smile crosses her face, and she exuberantly and proudly announces, "I'm Allison." And I said, "Hi, Allison. I'm Erica." She was so excited to get started. She sat right down, she took out her pencil, and I had brought in a passage to read about Wilma Rudolph, the Olympian sprinter who in the 1960s was acclaimed as the fastest woman runner in all of the world and won 3 gold medals. Allison's thirst for knowledge surpassed any child I have ever worked with. She would stop and say, "What's this word mean? What's that word mean?" Like the word determination. She said, "I've heard that word before, but what exactly does it mean?" In the passage, it explained that Rudolph had contracted polio when she was 4 years old and spent most of her early life disabled. I explained, "Allison, determination is when you work so hard for something that you want very badly, no matter what challenges, no matter what hard things may stand in your way, you fight to overcome, like Wilma Rudolph did." And she's like, "Wow." But then I see her mood shift, and she grows quiet for the first time. And she says, "Erica, can I tell you something?" And I said, "Yes, Allison, you can tell me anything. Usually it's about slime." And she says, "I had a disease, and I almost died. But my mom gave me half her liver, and she saved my life." And I instantly feel the tears well up in my eyes. And I'm like, "Don't cry, Erica. This child's going to think you think she's going to die if you cry. Don't cry, don't cry." And she continues. She launches in telling me about the procedures that she had done in the hospital without complaint. She told me about her friend who died on the ward, and she told me about her friend who survived but was only going to live until she was 20. She explained, "Yeah, she's only gonna live till she's like 20. My dad told me that." I don't know why he had to tell me that. I was like, Dad, why'd you have to tell me that? I think because he wants to brace her for the inevitable reality, and I am filled with anger. And can't get my mind around how unfair this is, that a child would be robbed of the innocence that every child deserves. Allison says, thank goodness there's a heaven. And then she says, do you believe in heaven? Which I don't, because I'm an atheist and I was raised Jewish before then, but my father was a horrible example of a Jew. He'd say, like, what the fuck? The goddamn Jews can't turn on the air conditioning? My goddamn balls are sweating. So I never had much respect for religion. But I don't lie to my students. And she's waiting. She's waiting for an answer. What finally comes to me is this experience that I had at the Broad Museum in the Infinity Room. And I explained to her, Allison, it was incredible. At first, I was scared because you walk into this box-like room and it's all dark and you're all alone and you're standing on a plank, like a platform, and there's black water rippling by under your feet. But it's only for a few seconds and then the lights come on and you are ensconced in these tiny white lights. And she stops me, ensconced? And I say, it's like you're completely surrounded, you're wrapped, like you're being given a huge embrace. And you see these mirrors that reflect your image, they're all around you. And your image gets tinier and tinier and tinier and tinier until you're as small as one of those white lights. And I explained to her that a sense that everything is okay in life and in death, everything is okay. And that these lights are souls, and we exist into infinity forever, surrounded with like souls. And we are never alone. And she says, thank goodness. And I say, thank goodness. Thank you.
So, if you like that story and you hear more stories, come out to our live Choose Your Own Religions. The next one, if you listen to this in the day or two it comes out, is on Sunday, August 5th. And then the next one is going to be on September 2nd, if I'm not at Burning Man. So keep tuned in for that, whether that happens or not. It's always on the first Sunday of the month when we have them. 6:30 in the clubhouse at Los Feliz. And you can find more info on that on the Facebook page, which you can find via my website or just, you know, by searching in the Facebook thing. Also a very efficient, easy way to find it. I love doing these shows, and I'm going to get some more guests who have been on the show and maybe do some more of these stories at the up top, and then we get a little bit even more background context to the kind of person they are before we get into our conversation. The other cool part about this episode is that Erica, as she talks about in this episode, has dealt with bipolar disorder for a lot of her life. And that's kind of what I think this episode kind of ended up being about. What is a person who has to deal with something like that What does their spiritual life look like from all the intense ups and downs? What kind of faith journey does that take you on? So we get into that, and to be honest, I don't know enough about the ins and outs of bipolar disorder to really speak more about it from my own standpoint or pretend I have any kind of authority on that. But if you suffer from it, and if you know somebody who suffers from it, maybe you'll find bits of her story that resonates. And to me, that's what this show is all about, finding people we resonate with. And so I hope you like this show. And if you like this show, you can find more episodes at ChooseYourOwnReligion.com. It's also where you can navigate your way to finding the Facebook page to find more about our live events and all that good stuff. And if you like this show, hey, why not leave a rating or review somewhere? Anytime you leave a new rating or review, it helps new people discover the show. So if you're like, hey, I really love this show. It's helped me a lot. It's meant a lot to me. I find it interesting. Wouldn't it be cool if other people found this too? Easy, free way to do that. Just leave a rating on review on iTunes or whatever platform you use. And that would be awesome. And I think that's pretty much it. I love you. It's hard to believe maybe, but I love you. Like for real. I don't always show it well. And I haven't always been perfect with showing it to everybody. But I love you. And I want you to be happy. We want you at your best. We're all rooting for you, whether we consciously know it or not. So please, give it up for the lovely Erica Blumfield.
Allow the soothing music and uplifting affirmations to center your heart and mind in an awareness of God's love.
Wake up, my dear sinners. Wake up from your deep rest. Won't you say your prayers? Know that you are blessed. I love you, oh, but Jesus loves you the best, and I hope that you choose your own religion.
So you came up with this. I don't think we actually went on a date, but this is what was weird. And you came up on my phone as Erica OKC, which is how I, you know, denominate anybody I meet from OKCupid. And then likewise, if you were from Tinder, would have been from Tinder. So OKCupid, I mean, that's a more wholesome one, right? We would have gotten to know each other at least more through questions and stuff and personality tests.
Yeah,
right?
Although I've gotten some I don't do OKCupid anymore. I don't do any of them anymore, but I got a real doozy on OKCupid, which was, you're so hot, I'd suck a fart out of your ass.
Whoa.
I don't know who that would work on.
I mean, it would work on at least somebody. You know, it's all about niche marketing. You might turn off 90% of people, but the 99% of people who don't want farts sucked out of their any place. Well, there's only really one place farts come out of. We don't need to dance
well,
around.
Well, you can queef.
Right. Which, I mean, that would actually be more of a direct play. But yeah. Anyway, so yeah. Okay, keep it. I'm not saying it's a bastion of good taste per se. But it is now like the old person's like more wholesome dating site, because it was like the original one. It was around like 2010 or something.
Yes.
It's like the first one I joined.
So what do our messages say?
All right. So this is all I know.
Okay. None of them are dirty, right?
None of them are dirty. There's not many. I mean, I could read the entire exchange probably.
Bail on me?
How about we do that? You want to do this? How about I read my text and you read yours? So
perfect.
I'm in white and you're in the teal. Erica, this is how it starts. Erica, it's Joe. How was your night bizarre?
Oh. Hey there. I met a guy friend and he flipped a switch on me. All I said was don't look at me while you're driving, LOL. Okay, it's not very funny.
How dare you?
Yeah. I know. Anyway, how's your night?
Good, playing around in VR.
I remember this one now. I remember this one.
But you never even played in VR. I don't think you ever came over, did you?
No, but I remember feeling like stupid because I was like, as in virtual reality?
Well, that is what you said. You said, as in virtual reality. I said, yep. Three piece. Ever tried it?
No. What kind, but I meant what kind, which some people can discredit you if you make one mistake in your writing or too many exclamation points.
It's true. And then it looks like I didn't respond until maybe the next morning. Because there's a time difference. I can't see the original time of these. Wait, hold on. I can't now. All right. So the first one was at... No, I can't. Never mind. JK. So the next morning, I say, I have a Vive. It's pretty crazy. You can play as a robot Jedi ninja with a boomerang sword or dodgeball. Then 7 hours elapse. Don't hear from you. Then I say, getting yelled at in a car tonight.
LOL. No, thankfully. I'm watching my friend's children so they could have an early dinner out. I think that was a lie.
Ooh, you lie.
I don't know. I don't know whose children it would be. What are you up to?
And I said, going home. And that was the last of it.
Oh my gosh.
That's it.
Oh no.
So
I think
I read your message as like, oh, okay. Not interested. Or like, you know, the lack of... I either read like how long you're taking to get back to me or like, I don't know how, or maybe there's a million other things that could have been going on with like what was happening in summer 2016. I can't even remember. It was almost 2 years ago to the day. This is July 21st, 2016.
It's our anniversary.
I know. I had the podcast going. This is I could go back into July 2016, see what was happening.
Oh my God.
It is a special day for us.
Well, it was my loss.
Well, that's very debatable.
I think I remember I was, I think what I actually was doing that night was I had another date.
Of course.
Yes.
You two-timer.
Mm-hmm. And the date actually turned out crazy. It wasn't really a date. It was like, I went over there.
It was a hangout?
It was a hangout.
Oh.
And I like wasn't feeling him. He like put on country music, contemporary country. And I was
I'm not feeling that
no.
already. Yeah.
And he had a vinyl collection, but his top record was the soundtrack from Gone with the Wind. He was so uncool.
I mean, was that a hipster type play or no? Just an authentic, like, weird person.
Just a weird person. And then, but what actually ended up happening was I was like, all right, whatever, I'm already over here. So we ended up getting, you know, busy a little bit. Like, we were up to the point where we were naked.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was like grossing me out. So I was like, I'll be right back. And I went into the bathroom to plot my escape plan. And then I saw a Bill O'Reilly book that was like dog-eared and underlined.
Oh my God.
And he had kind of given me like a Republican vibe.
Yeah.
So I go back out into the bedroom and I'm like, You like Bill O'Reilly? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, you watch Fox News? And he's like, not exclusively. And I said, you're not going to vote for Trump? And he's like, how did this turn political? And I was like, I'm leaving.
Wow.
And I left.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. And that must have left such an impression on you to remember all that.
I know. I much rather have been watching doing virtual reality.
Yeah,
I guess,
exactly.
With you.
Yeah. Oh well. Our paths just weren't quite aligned. but anyway, that's the best intro to this podcast I've ever had. It's so funny. It's also like it is a good reminder that as I think people mistreat each other on online dating most of the time, especially in LA, because you feel like, oh, I'll never have to see that person again. But
well, I think that I was like, oh, he must be like a weirdo who doesn't leave his apartment and like does virtual reality stuff. I was really judgy. I don't know.
That's
don't,
so funny.
But I know nothing. I mean, I don't know anything about virtual reality. Mm-hmm. So,
but we're doing that all the time, though, as humans. We have to make instant snap judgments and then what do you call it? Inferences. That's the right word. Because we just have, there is an infinite amount of possible information out there. We don't have time to sift through all of it. I mean, that's why, as much as I hate judging on appearances and I try not to, I mean, we all judge on appearances to some degree because they give us little shortcut clues on like who that person is.
Yeah.
And they can be wrong a lot.
Yeah. And
I'm really cool, actually. I don't know if you knew that.
I know you are. When I met you, I was like, Joe Quinn is the coolest.
Oh, I'm just kidding. But
I did. But what's funny is that I tried to sound so wholesome. Mm. Like, I'm watching my friend's kids.
Mm.
You know? Like,
yes.
That sounds a little... But then that can also work against you because people don't necessarily, for women my age, when you bring up kids, mm-hmm. it freaks men out a little
bit. Oh, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Especially when you, like, haven't met them before or anything, or, you know, unless they're, like, guys who are specifically looking for family and they're, like, older or whatever, and they're like, oh, cool. Yeah, then the wholesome play is the good one.
Yeah.
But I do, I mean, that's why I what I've come around to, because I think we've all... I don't know hardly anybody who hasn't, unless besides high school sweethearts, which none of their opinions on dating ever matter. You know, people who met in high school and middle school and still are married, like, we can throw their opinions just out on all this stuff,
it's
in
true.
My opinion.
It's
you know,
true.
They got lucky and blessed, and good for them. But the rest of us, just, I think almost all of us have at some point probably pretended to be something we're not in the beginning of dating people.
Yes. Well, I think particularly every man I've ever gone out with has done that. And I always say, I'm a teacher, but whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't teach for LAUSD, so I mm-hmm. can be a little bit more free.
Okay.
But I always say that, you know, you don't have to pretend to like me. I like sex. I'll have sex with you. Mm-hmm. Don't pretend, though, to like me, because then that's really the hurtful part. Let's, like, have fun.
Yeah. The false expectations or the false anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why we're, like, because, I don't know, I've gone through definitely periods of, like, wanting to, especially when you're, like, when I was younger and more, not necessarily desperate, but more just thirsty. You could say thirsty or
horny.
Horny, or, you know, more lonely too. More mm-hmm. like wanting, like, validation, like, on that base animal egoic level. That this is the classic thing. Of course, guys are more known for it, saying anything to get in a woman's pants or whatever. But I think it's true. Like, we'll often misrepresent ourselves, but ultimately. At the end of the day, I think that's why authenticity is so important to me, and why I think it's you're only hurting yourself in the long run, and you're only, and the other person, of course, too. But, like, at best case, you're just wasting everybody's time by, exactly. like, pretending to be something you're not.
Yeah. And also, like, I can't put it necessarily on all men. I know that I make certain choices, so I make maybe not the best choices with the kind of guys that I date, so mm-hmm. it would be a pattern of, you know, I like you so much to... Oh, the best... You want to hear the best one I had recently?
Yeah.
It wasn't even recent. It was July, but it totally made me kind of take a huge break, which is great. Mm. So we had been hanging out quite a bit, and, mm-hmm. you know, he was holding my hand and mm-hmm. looking into my eyes so lovingly. We got to the point where I cooked him dinner at his apartment, mm-hmm. you know, the whole thing. And then about 6 weeks into it, maybe 2 months, he calls me and he's like... And there were so many red flags, right? But I, like, was like, I caught them, and I was like, oh, well, he likes me, you know?
Yeah. You're just stringing them up on a pretty flagpole and putting it in your apartment.
Yeah.
Like, look at all these beautiful red flags.
These are gorgeous. And also, like, he wanted me to, we took a picture, and he said, put it on your Instagram account. And I said, that's a commitment.
Right. That's early.
Yeah. And I said to him, don't call me tomorrow or in 2 weeks or whatever and go, you're rushing things. You're so serious. You posted a picture of us on Instagram. Anyway, a few days later, he calls me and he says, I just have too much PTSD from my past relationships to date.
Mm.
And I was besides myself. And then at mm-hmm. first I got kind of angry, you know, and right. then it gave him exactly what he needed to mm-hmm. be like, see, this is what I'm talking about. And then I said, calm down a little bit. And then I was so broke and I was like, I'm taking a Uber to Culver City to talk to you. Mm-hmm. Is that okay? And he's like, yes, let's talk. We're talking. He's crying about mm-hmm. how scarred he is. Turns out then he says, you know, but really, you know, I have a date next week and I'm really looking forward to it.
What?
I know. And I was like, what? Well, wait, why aren't you going to have PTSD with that other woman? So.
Yeah. Well, maybe it would have been easier when it's, the first date is the easiest because you're not emotionally invested or something. I don't know. I don't know this guy's situation.
Who knows? He was not the one.
No, definitely not. And I mean, I think sometimes too, again, I don't know if this is what's happening with this fella in particular, but there have been situations with me where, I mean, last year, one of my biggest, like, toughest things I went through was, you know, somebody had told me they didn't want a relationship for a long time. And I kind of convinced myself I was okay with not wanting that to a degree. And I had, you know, so, but, and ultimately we split up because she was like, this is too much like a relationship, which is like, well, I should have seen that right. coming. But it's so important and difficult to be honest with ourselves. I don't even know if most people are really fully honest with themselves about what they really want. You know, I think mm-hmm. that's where, you know, and the older I get, the more I sound like a Republican or whatever. That's where culture and drugs and drinking just mask our suit. But, you know, then let me turn it into a hippie version.
All right.
Okay. So, but that's where, like, you know, society can make us mask our truest, highest selves from ourselves. And we listen to the fear side that says, I'm just happy that this person seems to be attracted enough to me to want to touch me occasionally.
Yes. Well, also, if we're lonely, sometimes we'll take less than what we really want or deserve,
right?
Because at least it saves some calories.
Right.
But, well, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, and this is, I mean, I've been harping on this a lot, both in this podcast and also just in my personal life with conversations with people. There's a addiction specialist, Dr. Gabor Mate, who works in Vancouver. But one of the things he talks about is how this problem of not being authentic it stems from childhood, and it's something we all have to a degree, because we need the positive attachments, not the Buddhist attachment of like that kind of thing, but like we need relationships as humans. Mm-hmm. Let's say there's a small 0.001%, like that can be a monk or whatever that doesn't need.
Right.
But most of us, we need to love and feel loved and be needed from our parents, from a spouse or whoever, you know, romantic relationship, friends, etc. But from childhood, almost everybody is taught in some way or another that your authentic self is not correct in some degree, and mm-hmm. sometimes it's often out of protecting us from danger. Like authentic babies want to be like, I want to touch the hot thing, and we're like, no, don't do that, don't play in traffic or whatever, but there still is pain. I mean, we've all seen, like, the kid whining. I saw a kid whining on a hike when I was in North Carolina last week about, like, their mom was like, hey, get down from there. She's like, why? I don't, because it's right. Like, yeah, because clearly you might die, you dummy.
Get dummy.
But then the kid, there's an implicit built-in
freedom.
Yeah. There's a built-in, yeah, our freedom is constricted, and there's a built-in almost implication, or the emotional memory of that is I expressed what I really wanted, who I really am, and I was in order to receive love, I had to then be something I'm not.
Yeah.
And we continue that on and on and on and on,
yeah,
for a long time, and hopefully as adults we learn to be like, you know what? It's not worth it. It's not worth it to not be myself. I gotta just be myself.
Yeah, I think I'm too much myself. That my friends are always like, what? You told him that? And I'm like, well, it's who I am. It's a big part of my identity. I have bipolar disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And so for dating, it's been, when do you disclose that? If you disclose it too late, will they feel deceived? You know, if you mm-hmm. disclose it too early before they get to know that you're a stable person living with mental illness,
right.
You know?
Right.
So, yeah, but authenticity is something. I turned 40. I'm going to turn 43 in September.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I would not have guessed that.
Thanks.
Not serious. I wouldn't have.
Yeah. Well, young at heart,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's just something that I've really worked on, and now I really am committed to it. And my feelings are, if someone doesn't like me for it, then they're not meant to be in my universe.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
I probably wouldn't like them either.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so much more freeing, you know, you don't beat yourself up as much. And
mm-hmm.
that's when, I mean, and like you're saying, that's when the true connection happens. But mm-hmm. it is hard to do, because then rejection feels even more intense.
Yeah. And oftentimes, and, you know, this is why a lot of people know that this is like one of my passions about, like, and my story of being, you know, my quote unquote, my version of a coming out story was like telling my parents I didn't believe in God or whatever. But that was important for me to express that authenticity so that I could have a relationship based on honesty and truth. And I think too, what's like so much of the time, I think being open about who you really are is so liberating, because when you're not, at least this is the way I am. And I've been getting into the Enneagram. Are you an Enneagram person at all? You seem like you might be an Enneagram person. Okay.
What is that?
The Enneagram is I'm going to totally butcher that because I've just been starting to get into it, but it's kind of like Myers-Briggs infused with a little bit more, let's say, spirituality, but like that makes it sound like it's woo-woo or something, but it's basically the Enneagram is like 9 different personality types that, and it was developed by a psychologist, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. But basically when you kind of learn your type, and then you also learn like I'm a type 4. So I learn, and like reading it, I was like, okay, that's really spot on. I'm not an astrology person. I tend to think it's hard for me to get on board with astrology, but this finding my type, it really was like, oh my God, this is describing like my life. And then you also be like, okay, when I'm stressed, I become more like a type whatever. And then when I'm feeling secure, I become more like a type 1 or whatever, and blah, blah, blah. And then therefore I'm based on this, there's lots of, it gets way more complex than what I'm getting into.
I'll have to look. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And I can't remember what my original point with that was, but the original point prior to that original point, was that there's a, I think so much of not being authentic for me is like about, being the alternative of not being authentic is that I'm constantly living in fear of like, oh, well, I can't be authentic because this is what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
The fear gets, the spirals and grows and grows and grows into this huge beast of like, well, it's just impossible for me to be who I really am because then I'll lose my job. Then I'll lose my parents. I'll lose the person I'm in love with, you know, I'll lose all this stuff. Whereas I think it's really beneficial for me to keep in mind something that I think Thomas Jefferson said, which was like, you know, I'm also butchering this quote, but like basically most of what we feared never actually turns out to happen.
It's true. Except for when it does.
Well, yeah, the handful of times it does, and that's enough to give us that PTSD.
Right.
And then we just bounce on somebody we're dating and show ourselves to be maybe a hypocrite. But
yeah. So what do you think the thing is that you're afraid they're going to find out about you
currently?
Yeah,
I don't know. I've actually been pretty awesome with my parents recently because I was able to, back in November, I told them about my experiences with ayahuasca and some other plant medicine stuff, and I was really afraid that they would react negatively to that, but they have been really on board because I explained that they came from, like, my experiences with those are about personal development and my spiritual growth, which, while it's definitely not their path because they're, you know, two Presbyterians, like Christian, like teetotalers, like hardly, my mom just now got into drinking like a glass of wine with the occasional dinner, like when it's like like weddings and stuff, or like when it's like when family is over, but like not, I don't even think she regularly does when I'm not at home. Although I wouldn't know, but
yeah.
But they were, and I mean, so yes, there was the fear, and sometimes the fears come true, but I will say the rewards were mighty powerful, and that my relationship with them is better than it has been in like a decade.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's real. See, the more I hide who I am from my parents, the better our relationship is. And I'm not even like, I don't even do stuff that parents would be like, I don't drink, you know? Lately I haven't been having sex. Mm-hmm. I'm like a good girl.
Yeah, parents don't want their kids having sex ever. No. Even their 43-year-old children.
No. I mean, I wouldn't talk about that with them anyway.
And that is one thing I won't. I can be not. It's not that I'm being inauthentic. I'm just not going to talk about.
No, it's gross.
Nobody wants that.
We just don't want to think about that.
Nobody wins.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
But what about, so what, well, how much... Well, I mean,
it's okay. You can ask me.
Yeah, I was about to say, are they going to be listening to this podcast, you know?
Hail to the no. I don't give them links or anything.
Oh, good,
and
good.
I can, if I post things on Facebook, I block them, and then
uh-huh.
they don't know about Instagram because they're older.
Good, yeah, let's keep it that way.
Oh, yeah, they know that. I mean, it's just, it's complicated because they have never accepted that I'm actually have an illness.
Mm-hmm.
They for a long time were like, you're faking, or they thought I, instead of it being that I was having issues keeping jobs, or I was in erratic relationships, or, mm-hmm. you know, having whatever, they thought I was faking. They yeah. thought I wasn't trying hard enough, and they still do.
Mm.
They never, and I mean, I've been through a lot, you know, I had to, they were not able to help me because they can't handle anything, and they also thought I was faking.
Mm.
And I had to live in, thank God it existed. I don't know how much, thank the universe. Correction.
Sure, yeah, whatever word we want to yeah. use, yeah.
You know, halfway houses, basically, for over two years
wow.
to get better.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's hard. I actually have to be my most inauthentic self with them politically and because they're so toxic, I just have to pretend.
Yeah.
And I just keep the peace because without it, they're even bigger, they're big, big nightmares.
Sure, yeah. Well, that I think they would guess where you're probably coming from politically, right? Or do they know?
Oh, yeah, they know yeah. I'm completely opposite of them.
Well, then to me, that's not being an authentic per se as much as it's like, not to discredit what you're saying, but like, I think it's less being an authentic and just like being like, yeah, let's not just bring up the obvious. Like, there's no progress that's going to be made. Nobody's mm-hmm. minds are going to get changed.
But my father wants to tell me all his views
yeah.
because I don't know, because he wants to try and change my views, or he just...
Or to him, that's his version of being authentic, is like, he needs to be like, I need to just express this side of myself that sees the world this certain way, and the world is just so against what I currently... Like, that's what a lot of conservatives seem to feel, is that the world is completely passing them by, and it's totally... And it's not the world that they grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, many of us would argue... way for the better, but there's a lot of stuff that's definitely worse, and that's not have to do politically. It's just like, I mean, we all bemoan the high tech and some people would say impersonal nature of how things are compared to where how we grew up without the internet, right?
It's true. I mean, I'm older, so how old are you?
I just turned 30.
Okay, so I'm quite a bit older yeah. than you.
But I was the last generation to grow up without the internet, basically.
Okay, so we have
until
that.
Middle school. Yeah.
Okay, right. And I didn't really have it. I don't even know when I got it. I remember in like 1999 or something
mm-hmm.
when I first kind of came. I think
yeah.
that was when I even had first email. Could that be? Or is that really behind?
No, email was around before that, but that's possibly when you could have gotten it.
It's
yeah.
probably. But anyway, yeah. I mean... Something that's really helped me over the past year was I stayed off all the apps and I stopped dating.
Yeah.
I
did that for a good 6 months too. Yeah.
Yeah.
But can I ask you too, with, I'm curious with your experience with, these 2 years of, you say halfway houses, like these
yeah.
like mental health kind of facilities, what part does in your experience was there like a role of spirituality, or was there like what was like the program structure? Like, did they like ask you to like get in touch with a higher power or anything like that? Or there were chaplains or?
They weren't chaplains, but it was a dual diagnosis place. So I had to go to a lot of AA meetings.
How was that?
Yeah. Well, not
great.
Good for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, my relationship to God was pretty non-existent. I was pretty angry. I felt, you know, abandoned by my family and all alone. And I certainly didn't feel like I felt like if there was a God, I wouldn't be going through this.
Yeah. And your family, strong Christians or?
No, Jewish.
Mm, right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But my parents, I told this at your story. I mean, mm-hmm. my dad would like complain about synagogue because it wasn't air conditioned. And then we basically stopped going as soon. I had a bat mitzvah, but it was more about the party and the show. And
to be fair, it's a good party.
Yeah, totally. It was fun. I don't know. I mean, I was very, very, well, also, this is kind of interesting, I think. When I'm manic, I become very religious. Mm-hmm. I believe, you know, when we pass people who have obvious mental illness, they're often, you know, on the streets proclaiming to be a messiah, or have seen, you know, talk to people who are, you know, I would go to churches and sit there and fervently pray and so.
And then you would go maybe swing the other, I don't know the proper terminology here, like you go to the opposite, what's the opposite of the manic?
Basically depression.
Depression, yeah. Right. And then you'd be completely devoid of that and be like, it was all a lie. But then would you like in the same month, year, like go back due to the nature of bipolar? So you'd then go back to manic and then you'd go back to like, oh yeah, this is all real.
Yeah. It's a pendulum.
Yeah.
Without medication. I also felt with believing in a God, I had to fight my ass off to survive. Like, you know, I was dying. I mean, I was so sick and I was in and out of hospitals and, you know, I couldn't work and I was in these places. I was, I was an NYU graduate, this like, you know, well-to-do Jewish girl who had every privilege. And by the time I was 18, I started working full-time waitressing and bartending, and I supported myself in Manhattan for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. The illness is progressive. So if you're not on medication, it kind of can get worse and worse.
Yeah.
But to me, I needed complete belief in my own power, that I had the power to change everything and make everything happen and survive. And if I believed that some God was going to take care of me, I was a real dum-dum.
Mm, I see. Like you needed to not, that was one of my issues. Well, yeah, there's something about, I totally respect people who are in AA and it works for them and in that path. But I think, yeah, it does seem a little bit disempowering at times being in various 12-step programs, potentially.
Yes, I think that it definitely works, and it's a great thing, and it's a wonderful tool, and it's free, and it's available to everybody. Mm-hmm. And I know so many people who were helped. But yeah, for me, I couldn't get over the, like, surrender.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, hail to the no, I'm not surrendering my power to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's healthy or unhealthy.
Yeah, you know, well, I do, it's like, I go back and forth on this, because I do think one of the great, it's a paradox, I guess, for me, because I think it's great for us to, one of the throes of addiction is feeling powerless, and so it can actually have the opposite effect of what I'm describing, when you discover like, oh, there is something greater than me that I can submit myself to, and my personal desires are like controllable, and they're, you know, there's something, if it was just up to me and my whims, then I'm going to stay as an addict, like doing addictive behaviors or whatever. But conversely, I don't know. I've talked about this before too. I just found it when I would, and maybe this is my ego talking, it definitely can be, but like I would just find it long-term disempowering to be constantly in like a victim mindset, that like, oh, I'm permanently an addict, I'm permanently like sick.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
That's, I know it's a
people. People. It works really well for a lot of people. So.
Right. It's a tricky one. I think that recovery is so individual. Mm-hmm. You know, and what works for some doesn't work for others, and you just have to. If you're in your addiction, try as many things as you can. If you're in that place where you're working towards getting out of it.
Yeah, and when you were going through these swings from being like, hell yeah, God, to like, no, there is no, to like pure Nietzsche, you know, right? Like,
yes.
God is dead.
Exactly.
Would you ever talk to any, were you going to mostly like synagogues, or were you going to other
oddly enough, I was going to churches, but I did things like I papered my bathroom. I pulled out pages from the Tao.
Oh, yeah. You know, I love
which,
it. Yeah.
To me, that's still something I can.
Do I have it over
do you
here?
Have it?
I have it somewhere.
Well, I'll tell you, my favorite one is basically along the lines of.
That's not over here.
You know, that we tried. That.
Oh, yeah, it is here.
Oh, my gosh. Let's see if we can find it. It's the one about being like water.
Oh, well, that.
I bet you I can find it. And,
oh, yeah.
But basically, it's saying. You know, water always finds a way. Mm-hmm. If it hits a rock, it goes over the rock. It goes, it seeps through the rock. It goes around the rock. It goes under the rock.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we'll find it later because it'll take too long.
It'll take a while. Yeah, but congratulations for being over 100 episodes in. And I think the first guest to actually pull out a book and try to reference something in one of these.
For some reason, I'm like, is it number 21?
Number 21? Let's see number 21. We're going to find out what number 21 is regardless. Okay, it's not water, but let's take a little intermission. Just, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's like flowing and watery and
absolutely.
So great Tay appears from flowing from Tao. Tao in action, only vague and intangible. Intangible and vague, but within it are images. Vague and intangible, within are entities. Shadowy and obscure, within it there is life. Life so real that within it there is trust. From the beginning, its name is not lost, but reappears through multiple origins. How do I know these origins? Like this.
I'm getting teary and I got goosebumps.
Mm. This is the, for those wondering, this is the translation by Stephen Addis and Stanley Lombardo. So the Addis and Lombardo.
So to me, that's about unknowingness, right? In a way?
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know. That's one of the cool things I love about the Tao Te Ching is that it's just fascinating how you read it and it's like, I can't describe what it's saying. And yet
I get the impression.
Yeah. It feels the wisdom there just feels very deep. It feels like a very deep pool of water.
Here, I'm going to do stick them on. See, let's do one.
Yeah, let's do one
more.
Yeah.
I'm cheating. I'm cheating a little.
How are you cheating?
Because I'm not, I said stickamancy, which is.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Great accomplishment seems unfinished, but its use is continuous. Great fullness seems empty, but in use is inexhaustible. Great straightness seems bent. Great skill seems clumsy. Great eloquence seems mute. Exertion overcomes cold. Calm overcomes heat. Pure calm is the norm under heaven. And then it's Chinese.
I can't even. I'm
Chinese?
Gonna,
yeah, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not going to pretend to be able to say
then
that.
Then it says something beautiful in Chinese.
I think that might be. It's either. I don't know. I have to read the translator's notes later whether that's like a repetition, like the original Chinese of whatever, of the preceding line or something. Anyway.
Right. But beautiful. I love the Tao.
So you got really into the Tao in this period.
Yeah. I mean, I was curious about religion. I took a lot of religion classes in college, even though I was a writing and acting major. I was interested in Jewish history. So I took lots of Jewish history classes. I mean, I think that I did have a desire to find a sense of comfort, and I always did have an envy for people who had religion because they seemed to be at more peace than I was in certain regards.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah, they had certainty and
And a sense of safety and a sense of like less chaos maybe. So, and then I took Hinduism and Buddhism and Taoism in college. So, wait, what was the original question?
So you got into Taoism.
Yeah. And Taoism really stuck. And then I liked, I had religion classes in high school and I went to a Quaker school. It was very hippy dippy. And we read The Tao of Pooh.
Oh, yeah. I have that somewhere too.
I love that one.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
That's cool. And something I just realized too, it was interesting to me about, I don't know if you have, if this is your experience with Judaism. I'm sure it depends a little bit on the sect of Judaism to a degree. But I've told the story on the podcast before, but like how I accidentally went to a bar mitzvah ceremony, mm-hmm. like the at a synagogue. I was just trying to go to a random Shabbat service, and then like, oh, it's actually this random kid's bar mitzvah. So I just hung out and watched the whole thing. And the kid was, you know, 13, and he was just talking. He talked in his speech. Yeah, everybody gets the speech when they do it. And he talked to how he was not. He's like, well, this is an important day, but not religiously because I don't believe in God. And people were like cool with like they laughed, like, you know.
Okay.
And then later, one of like the shul, like one of the rabbis at the shul, who was like presenting him some kind of, you know, gift or whatever. He's like, well, actually, it still is a religious day for you because we don't really care about the belief stuff in Judaism. That's more of a Christian thing, you
oh,
know.
Wow.
But what I think was my connection here was that I think what's interesting is that it's almost arguably there's an element of Taoism maybe in Judaism, because what I see from older Jewish people is that they still are like going, you know, they'll go regularly to synagogue and they'll sing songs and sing chants, but maybe they don't also always believe in God or believe in heaven or hell specifically, or like they're okay with not knowing a lot of this stuff, and they're okay with wrestling with, like, and some people I've heard describe it's like Judaism is almost it's about the wrestling with the questions of, is God real?
Exactly.
Is God just?
It's a conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's very philosophical.
Yeah.
And that is part of it, for sure.
Whereas Christianity, you have to go in. It seems, well, most Christian mm-hmm. denominations, you go in either assuming that, like, I know God is real, or you have to make statements of, you have to make a creed, a statement of belief saying, like, I believe in God the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, blah, 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 blah.
Exactly.
I could say the whole thing.
I can say, Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam, chamotzi lechem min haaretz. I think that's over the bread. But I will say...
What does that mean? Do you know?
Something about nothing. I don't know. No, something. I think it's about like being grateful for your food and breaking bread. You say it at Shabbat, so coming together. I hope that's right. It is a beautiful. There is so much beauty in Judaism, and I will say I identify so much culturally, and it is part of me. And when I often hear people, I was saying to someone who was Jewish the other day, I said, do you ever feel, because people, I look, you know, people never know what ethnicity I am because mm-hmm. I look exotic or whatever. The horrible term that they use, ethnically ambiguous, right? So people start probing, you know, in Ubers or Lyfts or at a party.
Are you Armenian?
Yeah, what are you? You know, are you Armenian? Are you Turkish? Are you... Mm-hmm. I love when they ask me if I'm Brazilian.
Oh, yeah, it's a compliment.
Oh, my God, I love that. But
like, si papi.
Si papi.
I don't even know if they say papi. Poppy in Brazil.
I don't know. You may have to cut that. No.
If I cut out all the offensive things I said, there would be no
podcast.
There'd
be no show.
Yeah.
But sometimes I find like then people, and then I say, no, I'm Russian. And then people are like, Russian? You don't look Russian. And I say, well, I'm Jewish, and Jewish people are a mix of everything mm-hmm. because we lived all over.
We didn't have a state for most of our existence.
We didn't have a state. And we were kicked out of Russia. We were kicked out of, you know, the Inquisition, Spain.
Right.
Like, it's everywhere. And often after I say I'm Jewish, there's like an awkward pause.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Like, yeah. People don't know. How do you interpret that awkward pause?
I think this is maybe my parents. Everyone's an anti-Semite. Everyone hates Jews. Mm. That's ingrained in me.
Mm.
When I went to Paris as a kid, my father said, don't tell anyone you're Jewish.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I'll say I and most of my friends aren't anti-Semite. However, obviously, they are also everywhere, and mm-hmm. they have been, for some reason, being anti-Semitic has just been a very persistent thing over thousands of years. I don't know if people are just butthurt that they feel like, oh, you guys think you're chosen, huh? You think you're so special.
That, and Jewish people throughout the history have been very successful.
True.
And usually... True. The money makers, and that was initially what happened in Nazi Germany.
Right, right, right.
You know, they were the jewelers, and even from Shakespeare, Shylock,
mm-hmm.
from The Merchant of Venice.
Oh, yeah.
That's that's anti-Semitic.
So it's partially a victim of like class warfare, of like populism being like, hey, look at these like more upper class folks that are also ethnically different from us.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, so that's very, and there, that's in LA,
yeah.
People who are, you know, oh, Jews run the industry.
Yeah, I want to pull up a great tweet from my friend Nat Baymel, who's been on the podcast, who was also Jewish, is also Jewish, I would say, like, was. From what I understand, you can't not be Jewish. You can't undo that.
No, I guess unless you convert to something else.
But then even then, you're still, they say you're culturally Jewish or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But... And like I said, he's been on the podcast. It was such a great tweet and so relevant for what we're talking about. Okay, being Jewish is strange because we're white, but hated by white people who think white people should be in charge of everything for supposedly being in charge of everything.
That's absolutely brilliant.
Isn't that like the best?
Yes.
It's a, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Good job, Nat.
But now I believe in a universe. I believe that if you do the work to clear the clutter, and if you do the work to, how do I explain it? If you do the work to look at your circumstances and say, old tapes that play in my head about how I'm no good, right? Creating so much fear is a huge blockage of energy. Nothing gets let in. And, you know, just a sense of comfort. And I feel like as soon as I started clearing the clutter away, one thing was like stop dating. Mm-hmm. Another thing was, you know, always intensive self-examination. And I had a lot of therapy because I was living in a place where I went to group therapy, you know, five times a week and was in extensive. Anyway, things open up. Like I had like three crazy universe things happen. I was at, do you want to hear?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, of course.
Excuse me. I was at a show on Monday night and I have a show that I'm doing called Love Me Madly. And I wanted to, and it's about like being, getting bipolar and like loving someone madly, you know, like not that great. I'm like, sorry, like the Colin. Hatter. Yes.
Yes.
I'm always sorry, Colin. I just, if he hears it, he should know. I really loved you. I promise. So I was at this show on Monday and the booker was there and she knows my face a little bit. It's a, at this good venue, like a hip, cool venue. Mm-hmm. And it was after the show and I thought, oh, maybe I'll approach her and tell her I have this show. And, but then we were all hanging out and it was like after hours. I said, I'll leave her alone. 4 days later, I randomly by mistake walked into the wrong building.
Uh-huh.
Looking for my friends who I was supposed to meet and she was there.
Whoa. Yeah, that's a weird universe.
That's a universe thing. And then something kind of more beautiful and maybe something, because that's kind of like not, a little bit like self-obsessed. Like, oh, yeah, my career, my Hollywood career, the universe is helping me. But this was really interesting. On Thursday, I spent the day with my friend from Philadelphia and her beautiful children. And it was so fun. And I love kids. I'm a teacher. And, you know, I really love children. And it was so wonderful. And then on Saturday, I went out to Claremont to help my best friend with her son's birthday party. And so there were his 10th birthday party and there are all these kids. And when I was in my 30s, one of the things about that I had to accept with bipolar disorder is that, like, for me, I wasn't, I know I can't have kids. Like, I can't go off my medication. I can't have my sleep disrupted. I have to create structure in my life and it has to be about what's good for me.
Yeah.
And you can't have kids and do that, you know? And it was so hard for me. I was so sad. I mean, all my life I knew I was going to have kids. And around 40, I said, I have a choice. I can either spend the rest of my life being sad about this, or I can accept that these were my circumstances and that I'm not alone, you know, like so many women can't have babies, you know, and that that's how life is, you know. But it's been so, and I was talking to a friend, a very dear friend also, I like call everyone my best friend who I love, but like they're my besties. You know, I said to her, we've been friends for about 2 years. And I said, have I ever even talked to you about this? And I talked to her about everything. She said, no, I had no idea that that was something that was so hard for you. And so when we were riding the train back with my friend after the birthday party, the friends, you know, the friend who's the mom, I was all opened up and I started crying. And she had never heard me express that either. And so she was so compassionate and loving. But basically what ended up a few hours later is I'm at a show. I'm sitting next to these people. The woman who I'm talking to does a show called Expressing Motherhood. And she's taking submissions. And she said, but you don't have to be a mom. And I said, that's so wild. I talked about my loss or my feeling of loss and how the stages of grief that I had to go through to accept it, you know, final stage of grief, right? Acceptance. Yeah. And I don't know. That seemed like the universe, too. It was like, here you have this thing that's so hard, but you're an artist. And now, whether she accepts my story or not, I started writing it.
Yeah.
And it had been something that I hadn't even thought about to write because it wasn't present really anymore.
Yeah.
So that's the universe, right? Bringing our paths together.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Or I just don't know. Luck. I mean, it could be luck. I don't know. That's one of those things where I go back and forth with myself. I mean, we all have crazy serendipitous moments in our lives and some that are such insane serendipity, like stuff like that, or I can't think of a specific example for me right now, but you're just like, oh my God, that can't have been random chance. Right.
Right.
But I mean, maybe it is whatever, but not that you can make yourself, you know, you can't make yourself believe something versus not believe something. Like, you know, that was always the problem, you know, like Pascal's wager. Are you familiar with that? Where it was like Pascal was like a philosopher who was like, oh, well, it's better to believe in God than not, because there's no downside to believing in God. But if you believe in God, if you don't believe in God and there is a hell, then you're screwed. But it's like, but the problem with that has always been like, yeah, you can't make yourself like choose to believe something or not. You just either do or you don't. Yeah. But that being said, we clearly have a near universal thirst for meaning and finding connection and finding and creating meaning and putting a certain order to our lives. And so in a sense that search for meaning is in itself a decluttering by like neatly aligning stuff in your life. I don't know if that made sense.
Well, in a way, isn't it nice to think, oh, because I was authentic, it opened up some kind of energy. It put something out into the universe.
Yeah.
And then out of the 50 people that are at the show, that's who I ended up sitting next to. And
yeah.
Well, one thing that was, because my bipolar, when I'm manic, I always think everything's a reality television show. And so everything's, you know, coincidences were being orchestrated. So for me, something I have to, so I think this is why I fought even a belief in a comforting universe that is out there to kind of help us, guide us and navigate and whatnot. So because every time I believed in, you know, I didn't believe, it's like, I'm scared. Sometimes I'm scared I'll go see like, oh, it's a reality television show or something, you know, like looking into these things too much. But now I know this is it's not a reality television show. Nope.
You know, like Truman Show type stuff is what you're saying? Yeah.
It was like the Truman Show.
I mean, that's one of my favorite parts of that movie. Like the aspect of that movie being in our culture is that I think we all have at least at some point be like, are you guys all actors? ears right now.
Are you part of this show?
And that's like, so that was so delicious for your ego to be like, ah, yes, it is all about me. Ha ha, I knew it.
Yes. And now it's actually a thing. Like, they call it the Truman Syndrome because they started noticing that this was a pattern with people in manias. Yeah, did you want me to talk at all? I mean, I know we've been talking a lot, so, but did you want me to talk a little bit about my experience that I talked about at your show?
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so about 2 years ago, I guess, I went to... Should I start with a little brief about the kid?
Yeah, just fill people in briefly, yeah.
So I'm a teacher, and I had a new student, and she's 10, but she's a little peanut. She looks, oh my God, she's so cute. And the first day I saw her, she was skipping down the hall, and she was just so exuberant and so excited to learn. And I had brought in a passage about Wilma Rudolph, the Olympic sprinter in the 1960s who won 3 Olympic gold medals. Mm-hmm. And as a child, she had polio and was physically disabled for most of her early life. And I got to the word determination, and Allison said, what's that mean? And I said, well, you work really, really hard. If hard things get in your way, you keep going for it and you don't give up. Like Wilma Rudolph, you know, having been disabled, and she worked to become an Olympic runner. And she's like, wow. And then she asked me if she could tell me something, and I said sure. And it was that she had a syndrome, like a disease, and she needed a liver transplant, and her mother gave her half her liver and she survived. And so she's telling me this whole story, and then she pauses and she asks me if I believed in heaven. Mm-hmm. And I don't really, you know. Mm-hmm. Although now, after this conversation with her, it's taken me on a whole nother philosophical plane, right? Mm-hmm. What I eventually told her was about an experience at the Broad Museum in the Infinity Room, which I'll explain for people who haven't been there. Mm-hmm. So I said to her, I was like, Allison, it's so incredible. You walk into this small box of a room and it's all dark. And at first I was really afraid, but within seconds, these little tiny lights come on and you're completely surrounded in them. And these mirrors that refract your image until you're so tiny. I mean, you can see yourself from every angle and you just get smaller and smaller and smaller until you are as tiny as one of those lights. Mm-hmm. And for me, I wept in there. I wept. I had.
Yeah, I gotta go.
And I'm sorry. I don't want to like ruin this for anyone. Their expectations are gonna be so high, but trust me, they're gonna be fulfilled.
Bring some tissue.
Yeah, bring some tissue. And I really, truly, and I've had such hard times, like where I. You know, so many times where I was so alone, and I was, you know, not always so alone. There were people who loved me, but I was so depressed and I was so ashamed and so afraid of having this illness, you know, and feeling like I was never going to have a normal life, and scared of the future and sad about not having children, you know. And I was in that room and it gave me the sense of everything is okay. Mm-hmm. In life, in death, and then I'm okay. And it relieved, you know, a paranoid anxiety of, you know, or anxiety of the anxiety of life. And yeah, and that it made me believe that our souls go somewhere. We're these, you know, it's a force, and we mingle. Maybe we're hanging out. Maybe we're smoking a bowl. I don't know. But yeah, it was really powerful, and it changed me.
Wow.
And then I shared it with her, and she said, and so basically, I guess I said, I do believe in heaven, right, by sharing bits of that. And then she just said, thank goodness.
So. Man, yeah, well, thank you for sharing that.
Thanks.
Again. Yeah, I think I don't know if there's a heaven. I don't think I believe in like cloudy cloud heaven, like mansions in the sky where we all, it's like a big neighborhood that you can easily just go visit your parents whenever, just a nicer version of suburbia.
Right. Or maybe you like turn young again, like you're your best, hottest self.
Right. But then I don't want to see, it'd be weird to see my parents at their best and hottest too. So they get, don't need to tell everything to my parents. I'm like, I don't need this. Well, it'd be kind of weird. It'd be cool.
Yeah.
Right.
Did you ever see Defending Your Life? Defending Your Life. Have you ever seen that movie? Oh, it's so funny.
It's
James Brooks and Meryl Streep.
Okay.
And they go to heaven, but the version of heaven is kick-ass. He dies. He's like driving, like in his convertible, like screaming some Barbra Streisand song. Anyway, check it out.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, and that version does exist. Who knows? but I think and this is where I guess to tie it a little bit back into Taoism, which I was heavily into Zen for a couple years earlier in my 20s, and Zen being influenced by essentially Taoism plus like Buddhism kind of fused together. But something that was oddly comforting, which can end up being nihilistic if you're not careful, but is coming to through meditation practice or some other kind of practice, coming to letting, again, to declutter your mind, to let, as one of my favorite pastors, Ed Bacon, would say, letting the silt settle. Coming to a place of stillness, true stillness, and in that stillness, just feeling the infinite, and feeling the infinityness,
infinitesimalness.
Oh my God! Yeah.
Yes.
Vocabulary.
Yes. I know the word. I can't pronounce it.
Yeah.
But yes.
To feeling that, and even if there's no afterlife where my soul is consciously like there, hanging out with, mom and dad, or my being hot me or whatever. There's free love. Everybody's partying. I think the vastness of, and maybe that's my higher power sometimes is that vastness. The power doesn't have to be a consciousness, the higher power, the greater power, the greater energy is that it doesn't diminish my bigness. It doesn't diminish me to say I'm a part of a giant quilt. It's just realizing it's a big ass quilt out there.
Yes. I agree. And I think, something that makes people really sad in life is the whole attachment thing. It's so Western to not be able to let go.
Yeah.
And it's so Western to not accept that all things end.
Mm-hmm.
All things end. It's nature.
Yep.
And
hey, Sufjan Stevens will tell you that too.
Shut up. I love Sufjan Stevens.
Yeah, all things go.
All things go.
You've made a lot of mistakes.
Oh my God.
I have Sufjan. Thank you.
Yeah, so beautiful.
And he's a Christian singer, obviously.
I didn't ever really think of it. He's a genius.
He is a genius. And he's one of my faves.
Anyway. He also has made me have that sense of comfort.
Right?
Yeah. Music really does that too. But people really suffer. Divorce is so common. And I've never been divorced, but I've lost relationships that I deeply loved people. And you can either, why can't we go, all right, we had this amount of wonderful time.
Right.
And now it's over. And I'm not going to be bitter, and I'm not obviously sad and grieve and have feelings of, I wish it hadn't turned out that way, or it was a loss. Sorry, I bumped away from microphone. But it totally negates all the wonderful experiences you have if you can't. When things end,
right.
Look at it that way.
Right.
And people say to me when they hear my story, well, what I've been through like is nothing compared to what you went through. And I always say, I don't believe that. No one goes through this life unscathed.
It's not a competition. It's not, not a pain competition.
Yeah. And, you know, hard is hard is hard.
And all we know is our direct experience with our own hardness, which can be by our own relative subjective experience. It's all pain can be difficult. Even the billionaires who... And there's plenty
except
of billionaires
for
who
the
are not
Kardashians.
Happy. Right, except for the Kardashians who are just living their best. No, but like, you know, but I mean, seriously though, like that's like one of some of the things, first things rich people tell you is like, yeah, it doesn't make you happy. People of all, and not to say that, well, whatever. It definitely would be better to be a billionaire.
Right, it can make things easier. Yeah. Money makes things easier. But if I think I have one thing that helps me from having, you know, gone through, you know, life threatening mm-hmm. situations and having to live in places where, you know, people had been in jail mm-hmm. and some for violent crimes. And guess what? Everyone became my friends. People were mentally ill. There were people who were so sick that, you know, better to keep distance from. But what I think what I learned or what I feel is like, I'm so grateful to be alive. I'm so grateful to be alive. I'm so grateful for my mental health. Like, it's not fun going mad, you know?
No.
It's so scary.
It's not all tea parties with the March hare.
No. Exactly. So whatever the thing is that you can tap to in your own life to find that gratitude for your life, then I feel like you realize you're a success.
Yeah. And that, yeah, for me, my recent experience that was skydiving. I'd never gone skydiving before.
Wow.
And it was crazy. I didn't know. I mean, I went with my friend or whatever, but I had to do, and I had to go tandem. Like, I had to be strapped to an instructor dude who was pretty quiet, almost zen-like dude, almost unfriendly, but like, he was fine, whatever. He's done like 10,000 of these. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I didn't know what I was like. I didn't feel, I hadn't been meditating when this happened. I've recently gotten back into it and it's so great. But, I'm just going to say my mind was not exceptionally pure this day or anything. You know, it was as cluttered as ever. But then as soon as we jumped out, we just fell out of that plane, I really didn't have many thoughts except for, I'm so fucking alive right now.
That's amazing.
And that was the only thought I really had. And it was great.
Yeah. I mean, that's like the infinity room. You feel empty.
Yeah. You see, maybe that's what it was, just seeing the vastness of the huge landscape in a way I had never seen it before. Just like, and feeling my direct, even different than being in a plane, you just feel the elements around you and you're in it. And
yeah, that's amazing, because I always thought it'd be great to be a bird.
It would be great to be a bird, especially if, you know, well, some birds,
a flying bird.
Yeah, you say it'd be great to be a bird. It sounds like one of those cruel jokes. Yeah, where they'd be like, it'd be great to be a bird, I want to fly, and then they make you a penguin.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Although penguins are one of my favorite animals. But do you know about birds that they always circle back for birds that fall behind?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they don't leave each other behind.
I love that. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, I think we're...
I think that's...
about wrapped up.
Yeah, I'm chatty.
No, you're great. This is awesome. I had a great time.
You too.
Do you have anything you would like to plug? This, I don't know if... You said you had to show your show coming up, but this may not be out before that.
July 31st?
Yeah, I'll be cutting it close.
That's fine.
Is there any general place people can follow you? Or you want?
Oh, yeah. On my Instagram would be great. Mm-hmm. It's Erica with a C. Mm-hmm. And then it's Blumfield. Blumfield.
And everybody can follow you except your mom and dad. So no moms and dad. No moms and dads allowed.
Yeah.
I'm just like putting a old clubhouse, like treehouse sign that says like no moms and dads.
I know. Exactly. My enemies are going to find this and forward it to my parents.
Yeah, probably. I'm sure. Yeah,
like
they'll be.
Colin, the boy I mentioned, the man. He was a boy then, but now he's a man.
And he's on a vengeance tour.
Yeah.
Well, you know, hey, as far as, I don't know about how Colin feels, but for me.
Should we go on a date, Joe?
Yeah, I was about to say, there's no bad blood between, as far as I'm concerned. I don't mind that you lied to me about hanging out that you were watching some kids.
It just came to me. I may have been watching my friends, Alex and Rosanna's kids. That okay. could have been true.
Okay.
But I did think you were weird because you said virtual reality.
Yeah. And honestly, I was probably just lazy and being like, hey, do you want to come over so you can like do this cool thing that I don't have to leave my apartment for or whatever?
Yeah, yeah. My head went to like, if he's doing other virtual reality, what other kind of virtual reality is he doing? I know, whatever. All right.
Well, anyway.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming over.
Mm-hmm.
I don't usually end with a thing, but what do you like? Is there any version of like namaste you like saying? If it could be namaste.
Let's do namaste.
What about? Or is there a Jewish version of namaste?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to think.
Is it Jewish? I'm avoiding trying to be offensive.
No, you're not.
Like, eh! Is that the Jewish? Forget it's, about
it. It's usually something a little cynical. Wait, but namaste is like...
The divine light in me bows to the divine light in you.
Oh, man, I feel like a bad Jew. There's so much beautiful...
Poetry
from the Talmud. And let's use some Yiddish. I'm going to say, Joe's a mensch.
Hell yeah. You're a mensch, too. Wait, is mensch is a Gentile?
Mensch
is a good Jew, isn't it?
Mensch means the highest compliment you can receive in Yiddish, which means you're just like an all-around good guy. You'd help people. You'd be there for people. Aww, yeah.
Thanks. Well, you know what? You're a good mensch, too.
Thank you.
Mensch-a-stay.
Perfect.
And that's the show. Thanks once again to Erica. Check out ChooseYourOwnReligion.com for old episodes. Live Choose Your Own Religions, first Sunday of every month. Next one, August 5th. One after that, maybe September 2nd. If not, it'll be in October. More info on the Facebook page. I love you. Jamaste.
I'm Joel Spence.
And I'm Deborah Tarika.
And we're co-hosts of This Particular Album Is Very, Very Important to Me.
This is the podcast where we ask people we love to pick an album that is very, very important to them. And here they share their memories.
Great. And not so great.
And emotional connections.
Great. And also not so great.
And we all get to listen to it through their ears.
Join us for season one with guests like Ty Burrell, Nicole Byer, Betsy Sodaro, John Ross Bowie, and more. Available at Campfire Media or wherever you get your podcasts.
Campfire.